Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this March 17th, 2023. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. It's 10:05 on the clock, and you got your host, James J. Maloff, here at 10:30. We're going to welcome in our friends from the League of Women Voters. We have Mary Dom coming in, along with Catherine Eckert, director of McMillan Memorial Library. Right now in studio, or I'm sorry, on the phone, we have Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. Good morning, sir.
Hey, James. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. I do want to send a shout-out to Pam Hilke. Scheduling Mr. Teston on St. Patrick's Day, we have a Patrick joining us. This is just too fitting, right? No, you have to be tired of that, sir. You've got to be tired of that.
Never gets old, but, hey, luck of the Irish, and it's a great day, so I can't complain.
You're a good sport, Patrick. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for joining us, and especially with your busy morning that you've had. You were just at the spring legislative breakfast. How did that go?
It went really well. I thought we had a really good conversation, and it's always great when the Heart of Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce puts together these legislative breakfasts because, you know, it gives us an opportunity as elected officials to exchange ideas with community leaders and members and just about every sector, whether it's, you know, folks from industry, whether it's folks from mid-state, local officials, and just to kind of give them an update on where things are at down in Madison, especially now as we get ready to dive into the state budget process. And as a member of the Joint Finance Committee, I'm really looking forward to the weeks and months ahead and to really get feedback from individuals on, you know, what they like, what they don't like, and that's what we're really trying to encourage everyone, not just members of the Finance Committee, but all members of the legislature as they begin to go throughout their legislative districts to get direct impact and feedback from individuals. So as we enter budget deliberations and negotiations with our other colleagues and various agencies and different stakeholders, that we're really taking people's feedback in mind as we craft the next state budget.
When it comes to 2023 and going forward, really, in politics, how vital are these kind of town hall meetings, these things, when you're able to be a part of them as a politician and have no, there's no chance for fake news when you're talking straight person to person here. You're able to relay information that is right from you. There's no way that you can miscue that.
It's critically important. I mean, because, you know, there are so many different issue areas that are impacted throughout the state budget. And sometimes we might not necessarily know how a particular provision in the budget impacts someone both directly and indirectly back home. And so when you get to have that interaction and that line of communication with the people you represent, it's extremely useful. And that's why I'm strongly encouraging people as our colleagues begin to get these scheduled around their various districts. What I've really been pushing is to encourage people, if they're able to attend, the Joint Finance Committee is going to have several public hearings around the state starting on April 5th. And so in April 5th, we'll be in Waukesha at the Waukesha County Expo Center from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. April 11th, we'll be in Eau Claire at the Davies Student Center, again, from 10 a.m. till 5. One that's a little bit closer to home is going to be April 12th in the Wisconsin Dells at the Wilderness Resort, again, from 10 to 5. And then April 26th up in Minocqua at the Lakeland Union High School. And so this is an opportunity for members of the public to show up and give their input. And then the other new mechanism that we have that's new for the Finance Committee this year is that if you are for some reason unable to attend any of the Joint Finance Committee public hearings, and if you're not able to attend your own legislators' in-district budget hearings and listening sessions, the Joint Finance Committee for the first time ever has created a website where people will have the opportunity to provide public comment and input that will be shared with members of the Finance Committee as well as individual members from their respective districts. So we're trying to be provide as many pathways and opportunities to receive that vital public input.
What were some of the main talking points that came up today at the breakfast?
You know, I think some of the big discussion points that came up today as it relates to shared revenue, you know, obviously this is a huge point of emphasis for the counties, the League of Municipalities, the Towns Association. And so, you know, there are conversations ongoing. They're still very high level, but we're hoping to make some changes to the shared revenue formula. So money's going back to the government that's closest to the people to provide for specific services, whether it's fire, EMS, and police services, even down to the ability to maintain our infrastructure, whether it's our county, our state highway trunk system, our county highways, right down to our town roads. And so that was a big area of conversation. Other topics that we touched on was just kind of the budget in general, where things stand with what the governor proposed. We had conversations as it relates to K-12. And really, I think probably one of the big areas that we focused a lot on was economic development, primarily talent attraction, affordable housing, things like tax reform, how these all interact with one another, and are all individual pieces of a much larger puzzle on how we can continue to move our state in the right direction.
You feel like some good conversation came of that?
Yeah, I thought we had a very good back and forth, a healthy dialogue. And so it's events like this that really encourage me, because, you know, we can have differences of opinion and we may not always all agree. But what I've always enjoyed about this area of the state in particular is that, you know, at the end of the day, we all want what's best for our region. And finding that collaboration and that agreement, I think, goes a long way moving forward. And that's how you get results done.
We're speaking with Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. And, sir, one of the things that I was thinking about leading into this and our conversation, doing some homework this weekend for questions for you and everything, and talking to the listeners out there, these town hall meetings are important for you to be able to talk to constituents. It's similar to you going door to door and talking to them. But I'm curious, as we move forward with social media and the 24-hour news cycle, all these things, it's so important for our representatives to be on the ground level with the constituents, to understand truly what their needs are. It's your job. It's part of it. How do you do that? How do you not, you know, just, you know, have all your thoughts and everything just in a bubble, like we all tend to do these days? How do you get outside of that bubble to hear what people are in need of?
Well, I mean, it's doing events like this morning, showing up to chamber breakfast to hear from community leaders. It's, you know, showing up to the Elks Lodge on a Friday night and going to a fish fry and just, you know, and having a beer and a fish fry and just talking to people on what's on their mind. I mean, and then doing our listening sessions. Now, we haven't scheduled ours yet, as you can probably imagine. We've been very busy as we begin to get briefed by Legislative Fiscal Bureau on different state agencies and various stakeholder meetings, but we're going to be getting those out there hopefully shortly. And really, it's just about being accessible. And when people contact us, we try and get back to them in a reasonable time frame. I can't say we bat 1,000, but we do our best to keep in touch and then also encourage people to reach out, whether it's through our official Senate page, follow us on social media. I mean, I'm not hard to get a hold of, that's for sure.
That's very true. We appreciate that, by the way, over here on this end. Wisconsin lost nearly 1 million acres of farmland between 2010 and 2021. There is a new bipartisan group of legislators led by yourself to reintroduce some legislation to update the farmland preservation program. That's right from your own newsletter. I'll let you tell the audience a little more about this and what you and your colleagues are working on here.
Yeah, so the Wisconsin Farmland Preservation Tax Credit has existed since 1977, and it's critically important, especially now more than ever, as you alluded to, because from 2010 to 2021, Wisconsin lost 1 million acres of usable farmland. And when you consider the fact that Wisconsin is a national leader and producer of things like potato and vegetables, we're one of the top producers of corn and soy in the entire country. There's a strong case to be made that Wisconsin not only helps feed the country, but helps feed the world. And we want to make sure that is a trend that continues. And one of the tools that has been around since 1977 is the Farmland Preservation Tax Credit. Now, the one issue, though, that has occurred is that it hasn't necessarily, the program hasn't changed in recent years to continue usership, and more importantly, to encourage more buy-in for farmers to participate in the program. And so what we have done over the last couple sessions is we've introduced the bill, and it seems to gain a little bit more traction each and every time. to make changes to the program that were really based on survey results that the Department of Agriculture sent out to farmers who were enrolled in the program or may have expressed interest to be in the program. And we took that feedback and used it to draft this legislation that would essentially, anyone who's enrolled in this program is committed for 15 years if they want to continue to receive these tax credits, to use things like cover crops and other best management practices. And so under our existing law, if you enroll in this program, you're locked in for 15 years. We'd like to lower that participation timeline down to 10 years, and then also to help encourage more buy-in, help raise the available amount of tax credits per acre that exists currently in the program.
Anything that we can do to kind of try to keep the life and build, bring some new life, maybe some new blood into the farming industry, the ag industry, seems like it's going to be helpful. One of the ways that I think is a great way of looking at some of this stuff sometimes is if you're on the fence on it or you're on the other side of it and we're trying to win you over with it. Imagine Wisconsin without the ag industry. Imagine if we did not have the agriculture industry in this state. I mean, it's a ghost town. I didn't want to think about it. I can't even imagine what it looked like. Now imagine the rest of the country without Wisconsin having its ag industry or its strong ag industry. It's scary. It's something that we want to play offense on this. We don't want to play defense. We're already kind of playing a little defense on it with you. Had those numbers I gave you early. We lost 1 million acres. That right there should hopefully get people's attention and hopefully get some bipartisan support on this bill. It says that the proposed circulate co-sponsorship around March 12th. So how did that go?
It went well. I mean, it's out there for co-sponsorship. We've got more co-sponsors than we have in any previous session that this bill has been introduced. And I'm really encouraged because Senator Howard Markwein, who is the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, has signed on. And so when you're talking things that revolve around any appropriations or a tax credit, when you've got the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, you feel pretty optimistic about your chances. And the fact that it's bipartisan, the fact that you have conservation groups who are in support, you have the Ag Coalition groups who are in support, I think we've got a really good opportunity to make critical and much-needed changes to this vital tax credit program for our farmers.
Senator Teston, if I was not here interviewing you, there's a good chance that I would be off fighting fires with some of our bravest and best out there. You recently spent some time with them, you and Representative Shankland. You were there to celebrate the FEMA grant that they received over at the Stevens Point Fire Department. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so this was late last month. It was announced that the Stevens Point Fire Department received a $238,000 grant from FEMA to help purchase new equipment for their self-contained breathing apparatuses. And these are very competitive grants. We're very fortunate that one of our very own departments here in central Wisconsin received this because, you know, their equipment was outdated. Oh, it was about 15 years old. And the city had already planned to use some of their capital budget to purchase new equipment. And thanks to these FEMA grants, they're able to buy these new self-contained breathing apparatuses, which are state-of-the-art. And it's hopefully going to free up that what would have been a capital investment by the city to reinvest into other areas for public safety. And so myself, Representative Shankland, Senator Baldwin's office were there because we had all supported the grant application for the fire department. And it's, again, another one of those prime examples of when you can put aside, you know, your political differences and roll up your sleeves and do what's in the best interest for our communities, you see the results. And what was really fun about this experience, so, you know, we were there to just, you know, say a few words of support. And then afterwards, they actually allowed us to demonstrate this new equipment. And what was pretty neat about this is that they had the ability to plug into what are called buddy lines. So if for some reason someone's tank went down or if there was an issue, you can hook up to another individual's tank and be able to breathe oxygen. And so we got to demonstrate that, Representative Shankland and I, and it was a neat experience. But I'll be the first to admit, I don't know if I would have the stomach to wear that going into a burning house like our brave men and women who serve in our fire departments all across the state.
Well said. It's very good to hear. It's encouraging to hear, too, and especially as we've all heard the stories of we need firefighters, we need more men and women in this industry. We can't expect to ask them to go into an industry where we're not giving them the right equipment. It's very encouraging to hear. Recently, you met with Representative Sarah Lemieux and George Stacey from the Ho-Chunk Nation. You guys had an interesting discussion. Would you mind telling us a little about that?
Yeah. So as is always the case at the start of every new session, and especially going into a budget cycle, you know, we get a lot of requests as people come down for various lobby days, and I got to meet with a couple of the legislators from the Ho-Chunk Nation. And, you know, I've had a really good working relationship with the Ho-Chunk, and, you know, we've worked on issues together over the years and have been very supportive. In fact, I've offered to go do one of my on-the-jobs at the Ho-Chunk, which we're currently trying to get that worked out, and have had the opportunity to address their legislature in years past, and have even extended an offer into if they have any historic artwork that they want displayed, I'd be more than happy to display it in my Capitol office. I mean, they provide such a rich history to our state, and, you know, they have such a big economic footprint, especially in central and western Wisconsin. I think it's important that we have these partnerships, which is why I was really proud to attend and listen to the State of the Tribes like I do every year. And, you know, there was a lot of areas where, you know, crossover on issues that we're also working on. In fact, one of the first issues that was addressed at the State of the Tribes was the need to allow our advanced practice registered nurses to operate at the highest level of their license. I was actually stunned that this was a huge priority for them, but the more I thought about it, I'm like, this makes sense. Many of our tribes are in more rural areas where there's a shortage of healthcare providers, and, you know, if this legislation can become law, which I hope it will, it's going to provide more health outcomes and access to underserved areas, and there's no question that many of our tribes fall into that category.
It's really cool, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. Senator Tessin and I have been talking for a couple of years now doing this show together, and one of the things that you can relate to, I imagine, sir, is since we've been doing this, it never fails. I will get some emails from some people saying that I'm way too easy on you, and I'll get some emails from some people saying I'm way too hard on you, or that one way or another I am being biased, or you're being biased, or station is, or something like that, and you're going to have that nowadays, and I get it. But it's part of the reason I bring this up is to bring up the next topic here. I'm not 100% sure if you can even address this or touch on it too much, but it recently came out in the news that there was that you had accepted some donations over the legal maximum over several donors. Just to touch on this, is there anything you can say to address it, or do we need to move on?
No, I was actually surprised that this issue was brought up, because this is an issue that's been resolved now for a couple of years.
That's what I thought.
And so what had happened was, after my 2020 election, there was a reporter from the Badger Examiner who had reached out, because my race in 2020 was one of the highest legislative races in the state. And so what had happened was, this reporter reached out, we did an interview, and then he had a follow-up, and he had called me about a week later and said, well, are you aware you had some donations that went over the legal limit? I said, well, hold on, let me take a look. So we did an internal audit, and come to find out, in fact, we had some individuals who went over the legal amount. And sometimes, you know, it wasn't anything nefarious. In fact, it was comical. The Wisconsin Bankers PAC, they gave over the legal limit. You would think bankers are pretty good at crunching numbers. But
I'm sorry, that is kind of funny. Happens. That is kind of funny.
Yeah. Life is full of irony. So, I mean, we followed all the procedures. The over donations were returned. And then, you know, obviously, you know, we made a mistake. We paid a fine to the Wisconsin Ethics Commission, and that was that. So I was a little surprised that the story popped up in the last couple months, month or two, but you know, this was an issue that was resolved in 2021.
Well, and it's to me, the surprising part was that the story kind of was already told Like, I feel like it was already done, and I don't know why it necessarily came up again. But I do appreciate you addressing it, and I do think it isn't, obviously, and I'm sure you agree with me, accountability is very important, especially for our political parties, our political people. But, you know, that being said, it did seem like a story that already happened. I wasn't sure necessarily why. Didn't seem any new news to it, so do appreciate you addressing it. Recently, you were on the job. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, last Friday I had the chance to do one of my monthly on-the-job series down at the operating engineers down in Coloma at their training facility. And let me tell you, it was a really great experience. I mean, and truly what they're able to do with their training facility, there is nothing like it anywhere else in the country. Local 139 does a phenomenal job. And so, you know, they got to not only take me around, but I also got to try my hand on some of the equipment. I got to do my best on an excavator, and they let me operate a crane, which I was told they've never allowed any other legislator to do that, so please don't tell OSHA. All jokes aside, but it was good for me because, you know, not only did I get to see firsthand just the level of training that goes in, and really just how much they care and take pride in their facility and the work that they do, whether it's from the entry level jobs to the maintenance crew that is tasked with maintaining all the equipment that comes in from contractors all across the state. I mean, it truly is a model facility, and I'm really looking forward to their expansion project down there, which is going to open up more pathways for individuals who want and are excited about work within the trades, and they provide some of the best around.
And, you know, when we were talking earlier, and there is a connection here, when I was asking about, you know, we all live in these bubbles, and how do you get outside of those bubbles? I would think that you're on the job series is one of those as well that helps you do that. You're learning about these jobs, certainly, and that's great, and it's good to see you in there and doing those things. But also, the organic conversations I imagine you have with the clients and the people that are there.
Yeah, and that's one of the most enjoyable things for me and why we do it. I mean, prime example, back in the summer of 2018, I got to spend work alongside a night paving crew, American Asphalt, when they were doing work on I-39 between Stevens Point and Clover. And it gave me a far greater appreciation for what these guys do, well, guys and gals do, because at one point they had me up in the paver as one lane was, they only had one lane on I-39, and you've got semis and vehicles that are zipping by you just a few feet from your head that are doing 60, 70 miles in what should be a 55 posted zone. And so, I mean, it's dangerous work. But at the same time, the pride that these individuals take to really help build our infrastructure, I think it says a lot about their character and just the true grit and, you know, of these individuals that they do what they do because they love it and they take pride in what they do. And I think that is an art form that is sometimes lost with some individuals. And, you know, that's why I do the On the Job series, not just to get out there and experience something different, but to really, again, reaffirm and really drive home the narrative that there is dignity in all forms of work.
Well said. Always appreciate the time, sir. Thanks so much for hanging out with us this morning and in town at the Legislative Breakfast. It was great to have you there. Take care. Have a great St. Patrick's Day, and we'll talk again next month.
You as well.
And we'll be back with more our friends from the League of Women Voters in part two. That's coming up right here on WFHR's Morning Magazine.